Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and as much as President-elect Obama has been focusing on putting together his cabinet and planning to take over as commander-in-chief, he is also preparing for his role as father-in-chief. There haven't been young kids in the White House for a generation. So what's changed about fatherhood, and how does Obama's 100% commitment to his kids figure in? Joining us now are Adam Gopnik, staff writer at The New Yorker magazine, and Ta-Nehisi Coates, contributing editor to The Atlantic. Welcome back to WNYC, both of you.
Hey, Brian.
Oh, thanks for having me, Brian.
And you're both fathers. Do you think Obama's what he calls a 100% commitment to his role as father changes, Ta-Nehisi, the way we think about fatherhood?
Well, the safe answer, and I think the best answer, is I don't know. I think that's the first thing that has to be said. Having said that, I do think, we always talk about this within the African-American community, but I think in the country at large, there's a lot of hand-wringing right now about what role fathers are going to play going forward into the future. And, you know, we always talk about this crisis of fatherhood, et cetera. So it can't hurt, I think, to have this image of this active, loving father in the White House, a sort of father-in-chief. I don't think that can hurt, and it probably will help.
Same question, Adam Gopnik.
I completely agree. I don't see how it can possibly hurt. I do think that there's something quite beautiful about what seems to be, and of course it's always impossible to judge anybody else's parenting at a distance, but certainly what seems to be, Obama's kind of easy connection to his own role as a father. I don't know if you remember, I was very struck on the night of his election that if you looked at the prepared text as it was printed in the newspapers, he was supposed to say about his girls, "I love you so much." And what he actually said and improvised in the moment was, "I love you more than you can imagine," which is such a beautiful and subtly passionate thing for any father to say, "I love you more than you can imagine." And it clearly came from his heart. It wasn't in the prepared text. I don't see how that can be anything except a positive signal. I hate to even use the phrase a positive signal. That was a clear declaration of the depth of his engagement with his daughters. And what I think is so appealing about it is that it doesn't involve, you know, promise-keeping or some kind of big rhetorical statement. It's something that he clearly lives out in his daily life.
Men, women, is there anything about Barack Obama as a dad that changes anything for you, that changes anything for your community? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And I want to play a clip from the Father's Day speech that then-candidate Obama, Senator Obama, gave on Father's Day of this year. Ta-Nehisi, I know you've written about this. Here's about 45 seconds of that speech, and this is part of the section that really made the news.
We know that more than half of all black children live in single-parent households. Half, a number that's doubled since we were children. We know the statistics that children who grow up without a father are five times more likely to live in poverty and commit crime. They're nine times more likely to drop out of school, 20 times more likely to end up in prison. They're more likely to have behavioral problems, or run away from home, or become teen parents because the father wasn't in the home. The foundations of our community and our country are weaker because of this.
And Ta-Nehisi Coates, you criticized not the speech really, but the press coverage of the speech at the time as, you know, falsely saying that this sort of rebuke of absent black fathers was something new. You want to remind us of that?
Sure. I think for the record, I have to say, I love that speech, and I love that speech not simply because it's the president-elect saying it, or at that time candidate Obama, Senator Obama saying it, because Obama didn't have a father himself. And so I thought he was uniquely situated, not just as an African-American, not just as a politician, not just as a gentleman running for president, but as a person, as a human being, to give that speech. At the same time, there was also sort of this undercurrent, I think, that was present in the media of at last someone is finally saying this. And that's a perspective, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you can only really have if you don't spend much time around African Americans and where they convene in their social spaces. You go to any, as I've said before, black family reunion, it's so cliche to say this now, but you go to any black barbershop, any black church, and those exact sentiments are often stated. Specifically, there's a part in there where he talked, where he says something about be a father to any fool can make a baby, but you know it takes a man to be a father. That is the most ancient trope in the African. I've been hearing that for at least 20 years of my life. I mean, literally.
And I should mention, which I didn't in introducing you, that Ta-Nehisi Coates has a recent book, The Beautiful Struggle: A Father, Two Sons, and an Unlikely Road to Manhood. He was here for a book interview when that first came out earlier in the year. But if that's such an ancient trope in the African-American community, you know a lot of listeners are thinking, well, then why is the out-of-wedlock birth rate still something like 70%, and why is the epidemic of absentee fathers still an epidemic?
There are two answers to that question. The very wonky answer to that question is the reason why the absentee birth rate is, I'm sorry, the out-of-wedlock birth rate is 70% is twofold. A, it's, you know, what we all think, folks having too many babies out of wedlock, but also the fact that married African Americans actually have less children than married white Americans. I did quite a bit of debunking of that statistic on my site. Having said that, I don't say that to excuse what I think anybody would acknowledge as a problem with fatherhood in the African-American community. And it's that way because it's all about struggle. I mean, things take time. You know, the idea that, what are we talking, 200 years, 300 years of racial oppression will be dealt with in about 40 or 50 years, I think it's false. You know, we're all kind of impatient. Everybody's struggling. Everybody's trying to do their best.
Paul and Wyckoff has a thought about what Obama's public display of fatherhood means to him and his family. Hi, Paul.
Hi, how are you doing? Just wanted to quickly say, I mean, I'm not weighing in so much on fatherhood here, but my wife is African-American. I'm Caucasian. We've been married 30 years. We have two children, a 21-year-old boy at NYU and a 17-year-old girl at a local high school. So my kids are biracial. We're a mixed-race family. Beyond Obama even reflecting our political views so wonderfully, the fact that he is biracial and his family is—he radiates. He and Michelle radiate such healthy, such health as a family—is a powerful image for us as a biracial family in terms of acceptance.
Paul, thank you very much. And Adam Gopnik, you want to get back in here?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I took my kids this weekend to see In the Heights, that wonderful new musical that's been playing. And one of the remarkable things is that the first act curtain is an interracial kiss. And I'm sure when it was first in workshop 5 or 6 years ago, that was still a very dynamite kind of moment. And it was amazing at a matinee on Saturday that it was had 3 weeks ago been kind of drained of its terror, drained of its particular power in America, and was just part of the narrative of the show. It was really quite remarkable and stirring. Just coming back to what Ta-Nehisi was talking about, I think it's true that it's absurd to expect 200 years of oppression to be cured in 40. It's like people asking why aren't there more women in the Harvard mathematics department when women were only allowed to get PhDs in mathematics 40 years ago. So I think it is similar in that way. The only thing I'd add to it is that it's not just about Obama as a father, it seems to me, but one of the things that makes Obama so interesting is his attitude towards his father. That book of his, Dreams from My Father, which I think is so profoundly explanatory of Obama's point of view and take on things, is interesting in part because though it's called Dreams from My Father, though it could easily be called Dreams of My Father. He was an abandoned boy in lots of ways. He didn't have a present father. And yet that doesn't turn in his memoir into rancor or anger at his father, but finally into a kind of compassion and a kind of pity, which stirs him to behave differently.
And honestly, a woman I know asked me, why didn't he call that book, after reading it, she said, why didn't he call that book Dreams from My Mother? Because the mother was the one who took care of him and raised him and inspired him, and, the father was out of the picture.
But exactly, Brian, I think what he's saying in that book is that my father was out of the picture, and yet I had an obsession with him, and I had to make sense of who he had been in my relation to him. And finally, what he says in the end, if you remember of that wonderful book, is that the only shame in his father's life had been his silence, his inability to cope with the 1,000 pressures that were bearing down on him as an African man, and as a father. And it's that act of sort of reconciliation with his father's spirit that acts as the engine for Obama at the end of that book to act in, as a politician, to act as a father. And that, I think, is part of what makes him such a moving character as well as a stirring one.
Scott in Queens. Let me get Scott in Queens in here next. Scott, you're on WNYC. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Brian, first off, I love your show. I don't know why everyone keeps calling you Leonard, but I love your show.
I don't know. a few people in the last few days. But anyway, go ahead.
Quick comment. I'm 32 years old. I'm a black male. And I hope that some media coverage on Obama will shed light that there are tons of black men out there that take care of their children. It's like an anomaly. Even for myself, I have a child. I have one on the way. When I would take care of my son on the weekends, because my wife works on the weekends, we would go to the stores and people were like, well, who watches your son on the weekends? I'm looking at them like they're crazy. I'm like, well, he's with me. And, but it didn't register in their minds that I watch my son while my wife goes to work and that we live together. So it's a bit weird. So I just hope that a lot more media coverage on this will shed light on the positive and not on the negative. Yes, half of black children being raised are not raised to their fathers, but there's the other half that are raised that no one sheds any light on. People tend to focus on the negative only.
Scott, thank you very much. Ta-Nehisi?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, you know, listening to Adam, something really just occurred to me, because when I read the book, I always was struck and have been struck since that Barack Obama isn't angry at his father. I'm, like, angry at his father. You know?
You're angry than he is.
Everybody
you know,
read that book.
Place, but I'm angry for him. But one of the things that struck me was that perhaps there's some sort of lesson in that that we can take into the world when we start to deal with these fathers who are out of the lives of their kids, that, you know, anger will only take us but so far. Railing against these fathers for not, you know, doing what they're supposed to do, you know, which I guess emotionally I really, really support, it will only get you so far. I mean, and that's present in his book, in his lack of railing, you know, at his father, because I guess at the end of the day, you think about it, what can he do? What can he change here? What would be the point of all that anger?
Paul in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Paul.
Hi, how you doing?
All right.
So if you remember, before the last night of the Democratic Convention, the Obama family minus Barack was all on the stage, and Barack was video conferenced in, and he spoke to his two little girls. And it would have been gimmicky, but you could tell that the girls were used to it. And I later found out that he spoke to them every night via video conference. And it was an inspiration for me. I'm a traveling software executive, and I'm going to start doing that with my two little children every night, I think.
Yeah, all right. Well, you could go home once in a while. It reminds me of the movie 2001, A Space Odyssey. You know, the father was never home, but from space, he had a video conference with his kids. And somebody writes on our webpage, Obama's commitment to Michelle as a mother is also inspiring. I get the feeling that not a day goes by that he doesn't appreciate the time she spends being a full-time mother and the sacrifices she's made. Parenting is a team thing, and I think the dynamics are incredible. Ta-Nehisi?
Yes.
Any reaction to that?
Are you asking me about his commitment to his wife?
I just any reaction to that comment, if you have one.
No, I guess it is inspiring. I'm always leery about that sort of thing because I never know what's going on behind closed doors. Not to be graphic or explicit, but I don't know their relationship. It looks beautiful, and I guess that's inspiring.
And Obama isn't really a baby boomer, not quite a Gen Xer. Maybe he's on that cusp. Adam, do you think there's a generational shift in the expectation of fathers that he somehow signifies?
Sure. I mean, it's something that both Ta-Nehisi and I have written about. That is that maybe it's having children a little bit later. Maybe there's a million reasons, the feminist movement, that fathers not only have a commitment to their kids but boast about it more. But, you know, Brian, it's also wrong to imagine that there's kind of a long history only of cold fathering. I just finished a book that's half about Lincoln and half about Darwin. And one of the things that's striking about both of these men in the middle of the 19th century was the absolute devotion to their children. Lincoln was famous. It was a shanda among the neighbors in Springfield, Illinois, that Lincoln spoiled his boys so much. He was on the circuit a lot. But when he came back to be with them, he was with them all the time.
And this segment ends, unfortunately, but ends with another Obama-Lincoln comparison. How about that? And it wasn't Team of Rivals. Adam Gopnik, who wrote about being a dad in his book Through the Children's Gate, A Home in New York. Ta-Nehisi Coates in his most recent book, The Beautiful Struggle, A Father, Two Sons, and An Unlikely Road to Manhood. Thanks a lot, both of you, for being with us.
Thank you.
Pleasure talking.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.